Gina Renee Hall was an 18-year-old Radford University freshman back in 1980. She was from the small Southwest Virginia town of Coburn. And in June of 1980, on a June Saturday night, she went out for a night of dancing at the Blacksburg Marriott Lounge. Gina met a 28-year-old former Virginia Tech football player and Virginia Tech graduate by the name of Stephen Epperly. According to witnesses and according to Stephen Epperly's police statement, they danced in the Marriott Lounge to three or four songs, and then each went their separate ways for a while. And then at some point, close to midnight, they began talking again, and Epperly talked her into visiting a lake house, a secluded lake house on Clater Lake with him. There's some, certainly, speculation that Epperly might have tricked her, deceived her into thinking that there was a group of people from the nightclub that were going to the lake house, when in fact his intention was to take her there in a one-on-one situation. Now, Stephen Epperly had not driven to the nightclub that night, so he talked Gina into letting him drive her car to the lake house. About 1 a.m., Gina made a phone call from the lake house on Clater Lake, and her sister Delana answered the phone on the other end at her apartment near Radford University. Delana had not gone out with Gina that night. In fact, it was the only time Gina had been out by herself socially to a party or a nightclub. And according to Delana, Gina sounded out of character. She sounded worried, upset, and after a brief conversation, Gina told her sister that she was at Clater Lake. She was with a man named Steve, and then shortly after that, the phone line went dead. A few hours later, Stephen Epperly's best friend, another former Virginia Tech football player by the name of Bill King, came to the lake house close to 3 a.m. With a female companion by the name of Robin Robinson. King had a conversation with Epperly, who was down on the lower level of the three-level lake house. He did not see Epperly during the conversation, but Epperly expressed to him that Gina was there and that they would be leaving soon. At no point in the conversation did Bill King see or hear Gina. And Bill King's companion, Robin, also heard Steve Epperly, but did not see or hear Gina. Gina's sister, Delana, woke up early the next morning, obviously remembered the late-night phone call, and looked in the apartment, saw that Gina was not there, looked outside, saw the car that Gina had driven was not there, became increasingly worried, called friends, called her family back home, and the search was on that day for Gina Hall. The car was found the next day on Monday morning. It was found abandoned beneath a railroad trestle that bridges the New River from Pulaski County into Radford. Gina was not in the car. The trunk of the car had been left open, and inside the trunk there was blood and there was hair evidence, both of which were matched to Gina's type. The following day, which was Tuesday, Stephen Epperly came to the authorities. He was interviewed by a Virginia State trooper by the name of Austin Hall. Epperly told Austin Hall that he had met Gina at the nightclub that night, told an account of taking her back to the lake house. According to Epperly, he made advances, Gina declined, and according to Epperly's story, Gina gave him a ride home late that night, about 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning. They parted ways amicably, and according to Epperly, that was the last he had seen of Gina Hall. As the summer of 1980 went on, as June turned to July, there was more and more circumstantial evidence against Stephen Epperly. There was forensic evidence from the lake house that indicated a violent attack, and several incriminating statements that Epperly made to friends and acquaintances that were not confessions, but were what the authorities would call an implied admission that he made to friends. The Pulaski County Commonwealth's attorney was Everett Shockley. He was a young 29-year-old recent graduate of the College of William & Mary's Law School, and Shockley was faced with quite a dilemma. All the evidence pointed to Stephen Epperly, and everyone involved in the case was convinced of Epperly's guilt. He had a very violent background. There were two rape charges against him previously that that in which he gained acquittals. And as the summer of 1980 came to a close, Everett Shockley was faced with what was the most difficult decision of his career. A lot of his peers and even a judge in the area advised him not to press charges against Epperly. The fear was that without Gina's body, it would be hard to convince a jury to convict. That first they'd have to prove she was dead, and then obviously have to prove that Epperly had killed her. Shockley, going against the advice of most of his peers, decided to indict Epperly, and in early September, Epperly was indicted for first-degree murder. The case went to trial in December of 1980, and the Commonwealth's attorney, Prosecutor Everett Shockley, called 31 witnesses and presented over 90 pieces of forensic evidence. All accounts are, media accounts from then, that it was the Southwest Virginia's trial of the century. It was just a sensational trial. There was national news media in the town of Radford covering the case, and three former Virginia Tech football players testified, including one who was, back in the 1950s, had been featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated, interestingly enough, and went on to become on Virginia Tech's Board of Visitors, a man by the name of Bill Cranwell. Also significant was a tracking dog handler by the name of John Preston, who 10 days after Gina's disappearance, he came to Radford and followed a scent trail with his tracking dog, a dog that he called Harass 2. He followed the scent trail. He was scented on a pair of Stephen Epperly's underwear, followed the trail from where Gina's car was found abandoned over the railroad trestle, across the river, into the town of Radford, and followed a circuitous route through the town into a residential area and to the front porch of a house, and stopped right at the front door. And when the dog handler asked the investigators, "Whose house is this?" they said, "Our suspect, Stephen Epperly." So the question was the judge going to allow the dog handler's testimony? And after some heated arguments in chambers, he did admit the testimony. Preston testified. A Radford police detective testified that when the dog handler told Epperly what the dog had just done, the trail he had followed, Epperly said, "That's a damn good dog." And Epperly said it not once, but three times. "That's a damn good dog." The jury deliberated about 2 hours. In the beginning, you know, they realized that the prosecution would have to do a pretty darn good job of proving that Gina was dead. And they felt that within the first five or six witnesses, that the Commonwealth had successfully proven that, yes, Gina was dead. And for them, that was not an issue in their verdict. And I actually interviewed two members of the jury who actually got in touch with me when they heard that I was writing the book. According to them, there was not a lot of debate. Everyone was pretty set. You know, they took their time to discuss every witness and every piece of evidence. And when the vote was taken for the verdict, it was unanimous, and really with no discussion. Now, interestingly enough, you know, in the years since, the dog handler testimony is what a lot of people point to as the most significant part of it. But in the 90s, a Roanoke Times reporter interviewed 10 of the 12 jurors and who were available, and all 10 of them said they would have convicted him even without the dog testimony. Stephen Epperly was sentenced to life in prison, was the sentence recommended by the jury. The judge, Judge William Arthur, that was his sentence, life in prison. And interestingly enough, at the sentencing hearing, because Epperly was appealing the verdict and because he did have grounds for appeal, there was a chance that the judge could have the authority to release Epperly on bail until his appeal was heard, which would be at least a year. In fact, Epperly asked the judge, he pleaded with him, "Judge, I want to spend Christmas with my family. Can you please let me stay out on bail?" The judge then asked the prosecutor, Everett Shockley, what he thought, and Everett Shockley's comment in court was, "Gina Hall will not be home with her family for Christmas. Why should Stephen Epperly?" Epperly has never admitted his guilt. He has enthusiastically insisted on his innocence. His verdict went through a series of appeals, about 12 years of appeals, through the state courts. The verdict was upheld on direct appeal. Then he filed a writ of habeas corpus. Again, the conviction was upheld. And then the case went into federal court and was upheld each time. And an appeal was made to the finally to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case. And then by then it was about 1992, 1993, and his appeals were exhausted. Epperly then became eligible for parole in 94. And every 3 years he's come back up for parole and has been denied by the Virginia Parole Board, in large part because this is a person that not only killed someone, but who continues to punish her family by not disclosing what he did with her remains. Over the years, there have been several false alarms where bodies have been found and in the New River Valley area, and either it was another person or in a few cases it was a large animal remains. About 10 years ago, a current Radford police officer by the name of Lieutenant Andy Wilburn reopened the search for her remains. Lieutenant Wilburn was bothered by the fact that no one was actively looking for Gina Hall's remains. So he reopened the search, went back, re-interviewed witnesses from the trial, talked to old friends of Epperly's, pulled up old maps of the area, and he began looking and even got the help of a few Radford University professors, one of which is a professor skilled in the use of ground-penetrating radar to find clandestine graves, and another professor, Dr. Cliff Boyd, who's a forensic anthropologist and has experience as an archaeologist actually excavating covert burials. And that's what they've done. And in recent years, they've actually dug a site on the Radford University campus where they had reason to believe Gina might have been buried. And obviously, they did not find her, but they're continuing to look.